Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally, 7 days a week here in the United States, and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the education story when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. That is, if you're self-employed and you're paying that 15.3%. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of that $50,000 a second time? Now, you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the $50,000 in Social Security tax, and then they make you pay 17% of that same $50,000 in income tax. So that means that you're paying 17% of the $7,650 twice. Now, that's a little bookkeeping trick that steals an extra $1,300 from you and everyone else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice, like Social Security and the IRS does? Now, isn't that just special? And if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, our school, Tax and Status, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, last time I said we would take a look at a test which was given to eighth graders back in 1895. Could you have passed the eighth grade in 1895? Now, remember, when grandparents and great-grandparents stated that they only had an eighth grade education? Well, check this out. This is the very eighth grade final examination from 1895 in Salina, Kansas. It was taken from the original document on file at the Smoky Valley Genealogical Society and Library in Salina, Kansas, and it's reprinted was reprinted by the Salina Journal newspaper. So I told you last time, make sure that you have a pen and paper handy, and this is a short test. It's only 2 pages. And it starts off with the grammar test, then the arithmetic test, U.S. history test. And after U.S. history, let me get the page turned here, we have a orthography test. Orthography. I don't even know what orthography is. And then a geography test. So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-part test, and each one of them is timed. The grammar test is 1 hour. The arithmetic test, 1 hour and 15 minutes. U.S. history test, 45 minutes. The orthography test, 1 hour. And then the geography test is 1 hour. So before you could graduate from the eighth grade, you'd have to pass this test. Now, when I went to school, they used to require a minimum 70%. If you got 70%, you were at the D-minus level. If you got 73 or 4 or 5% D and 78, 9%, you got a D-plus, and then you got C-minus, and then C, and then C-plus, and then B-minus, and B-plus, and then you got A-minus, A, and A-plus. So you didn't have to ace the test to get an A-plus. As I recall, it was 96% to 100, or 98, 99, or 100%. You had to score high, but you'd get an A-plus. And there was an A, and then there was an A-minus. So I think an A required 92 to 100. And then B would require something up to 92% down to maybe 88% or something. And then there was C, and then so on down the line. Well, here we have a test, and I'm assuming that they'd have to pass it by 70%. It's about a five-hour test, five parts, and there's about an hour each part here. So an eighth grade student would have to pass these five timed programs in order to go to the ninth grade. In other words, in order to go to high school, you'd have to be able to pass this test. Now, I took the test. I couldn't pass it. I couldn't even come close. As I just pointed out, there's one section in here. I don't even know what the hell it is. We'll read and we'll find out what it is. But a lot of it I knew the answers to, but nowhere near 70%. So the bottom line is I would have flunked. And I'm 70 years old, and I couldn't pass this test today. Today. And my grandmother told me the same thing when I was a kid. She said, when I graduated from the eighth grade, now my grandmother was born in 1882, so by 1990 or 1895, she would have been just about at this eighth grade level. This is just about the test she took when she was in the eighth grade. And she told me when I was a kid that she knew more in the eighth grade than my father did when he graduated from high school. I was in high school at the time, and my dad had told me that he knew more when he was at my level in school, which was about the seventh or eighth grade, than I would know when I got out of high school. And then later on, I discovered he was right. So we have been going through a deliberate dumbing down of America, not just for the last 15 years since Charlotte Isherby wrote her monumental book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. This dumbing down of America goes back 100 years. And these educators like Dewey and Gatto and Wundt and the others, these guys have been planning this, you know, for the last 200 years, and they have succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. Wildest. Children today are so ignorant that just compared to where I was back in the 1950s, I could make the same statement today. Well, you people today are just plain dumb. Ignorant. All right, let's take a look at the test. I think you're going to be amazed. And for those of you that would like a copy of the test, if you don't have one or you haven't seen one of these around, send me a stamped self-addressed envelope. And then on it, remind me of what it is you want. And this comes from the Education Series. And this program series is the Education Series, the Education Story. And that you want that eighth grade test from 1895. And I'll go over and I'll spend my time, effort, and energy, and I'll go photocopy the test, just two pages, and stick it in your envelope and send it back to you. But don't make me pay the postage. Don't make me address the envelope, would you? Just send me a stamped, self-addressed envelope and stride on there. Send me that eighth grade test. Well, here's where we start. It's called grammar. The eighth grade final exam in 1895 in Salina, Kansas, the time for the test is 1 hour. There's 10 questions. It goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 through 10. And the very first question says, give 9 rules for the use of capital letters. Well, let me make a comment. I didn't even know that there were 9 rules for making capital letters. So whatever these 9 rules are, I don't have a clue. Not a clue. 70 years old. I don't know. Do you? You ever heard of such a thing? 9 rules for the use of capital letters. Number 2, name the parts of speech and define those that have no modifications. Well, I know some of the parts of speech, but define those that have no modifications? Huh? Number 3, define verse, stanza, and paragraph. I could probably do that. Number 4, what are the principal parts of a verb? Give the principal parts of lie, play, and run. That's a pretty good question. Number 5, define case. Illustrate each case. Huh? Number 6, what is punctuation? Give the rules for the principal marks of punctuation. Oh. Number 7 through 10, write a composition of about 150 words. And then show in the composition that you understand the practical use of the rules of grammar. Huh? Okay, there's your grammar test. 10 questions, 1 hour, which includes a 150-word essay to show that you understand the principal use of the rules of grammar. All right. The second test, the second part of the test, is arithmetic. And you get 1 hour and 15 minutes. 10 questions. And here's what they are. Number 1, name and define the fundamental rules of arithmetic. Did you know that there were some fundamental rules of arithmetic? I didn't, and I don't know what they are. Number 2, a wagon box is 2 feet deep, 10 feet long, and 3 feet wide. How many bushels of wheat will it hold? You'd have to know how many pounds a cubic foot of wheat weighs, wouldn't you? I don't know how much a cubic foot of wheat weighs. I don't know how many bushels fit into 1 cubic foot. But I guess in 1895, these eighth graders knew that. Now, number 3 asks, if a load of wheat weighs 3,942 pounds, what is it worth at 50 cents a bushel, deducting 1,050 pounds for tare? Well, I think that probably most of us could work that one out. Number 4. District number 33 has a valuation of $35,000. What is the necessary tax levy to carry on a school 7 months at $50 per month and leave $104 for incidentals? Probably most of us could figure that out, but it's not an easy question. And I can guarantee you that when I was in the eighth grade, I don't think I could have done that, but maybe I could have. Number 5. Find the cost of 6,720 pounds of coal at $6 per ton. Very simple and straightforward. Find the cost of 6,720 pounds of coal at $6 per ton. I would submit that most of us could probably figure that out. Number 6. Find the interest of $512.60 for 8 months and 18 days at 7% interest. Boy, that one's going to tax you. Find the interest of $512.60 for 8 months and 18 days at 7%. Number 7. What is the cost of 40 boards, 12 inches wide, 16 feet long, at $20 per meter? Now, that word meter is spelled M-E-T-R-E. I don't know what a meter is. Now, if they're using metric measures here, and I don't think they were back in 1895, I don't know what an M-E-T-R-E is. Now, we always measured by the board foot where I'm from. Evidently, in 1895, they must have had some other measurement. I couldn't work that out because I don't know what a meter is. Even if they were working with metric, I wouldn't be able to figure it out because I don't know what a meter is compared to a board foot. So I know a meter is about 39 inches, I think, as opposed to a yard. I don't know. What do you think? Number 8. Find a bank discount on $300 for 90 days with no grace at 10% interest. Let me read that one to you again. Number 8. Find the bank discount on $300 for 90 days with no grace at 10%. I looked at that. And to this moment in time, I don't know what they're asking me for. I don't know what I'm looking for. Don't understand the question. Boys and girls, I'm 70 years old. I don't even understand that question. Number 9. What is the cost of a square farm at $15 per acre with the distance of 640 yards? Now, that 640 rods, excuse me, I said yards, but 640 rods. I do remember when I went to public school, we did have the distance. A rod is so many feet, and I do remember learning that at one time. I got to tell you right now, I don't know how long a rod is. I guess I could go look it up, but remember, we're taking a test. You have to know what a rod is. You got to know what a meter is in order to work out the problem. And right off the top of my head, I don't know how long a rod is, so I'm stuck. Number 10, write a bank check, a promissory note, and a receipt. I can do that. I can do all three of those. Number 10, I could write a bank check, a promissory note, and a receipt. All right, now let's go to U.S. history. Time, 45 minutes, and it is an 8-part test. You got 8 questions in the test, 45 minutes, U.S. history. And they start off by number 1. Give the epochs into which U.S. history is divided. Epochs, E-P-O-C-H-S. Give the epochs. So, U.S. history. I don't know, I guess you'd start at Jamestown or Plymouth Rock. And then carry it through to certain time periods, which would be epochs, up through 1895. I haven't got a clue. And if I had been in school in 1954, 53, when I was in the 8th grade, if you'd asked me to divide U.S. history up into 8 epochs, I would have stood there and stammered and said, I don't know. Hell, I don't know at this moment in time. Next, number 2, give an account of the discovery of America by Columbus. Give an account. This is a treatise, so I've got to write up a 150-page story and tell the discovery of America by Columbus. Well, I could tell what I know, which, you know, probably by the time I was in the 8th grade wasn't very accurate as it amounts to truth or reality, but I could write that little account. Number 3, relate the causes and results of the Revolutionary War. That's another treatise. Sit here and write out the causes and results. Number 4, show the territorial growth of the United States. In 1895, show the territorial growth. Well, I guess we'd start with the Revolution and 1776, and then we'd carry that through to the Constitution and ratification in 1787, and then we'd probably run the thing through, say, the Cherokee Nations in 1830 and the Trail of Tears and so on. Yeah, I could probably do something like that. Number 5, tell what you can of the history of Kansas. Well, put another way, tell if you can the history of California or wherever you live. Tell the history of your state, wherever you live. Florida, Pennsylvania. Could you write a short treatise, 150, 200 words, and tell the history of your state? Next, number six. Describe three of the most prominent battles of the rebellion. Well, the rebellion would be the Civil War. So they're asking, describe three of the most prominent battles of the Civil War. Yeah, I could do that. But could the average kid today do that? Let me ask you, can you do that? Three prominent battles. Number seven, who were the following? Morse, Whitney, Fulton, Bell, Lincoln, Penn, and Howe. Those are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 very prominent Americans. Morris, M-O-R-S-E, who was he and what did he do? Whitney, who was he and what did he do? Fulton, who was he, what did he do? Bell, well, you probably remember the name Bell. Bell Telephone, what did he do? Lincoln. Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln. Penn, William Penn. Howe, H-O-W-E, Howe. These are inventors, presidents, governors. Number eight, name events connected with the following dates. 1607, 1620, 1800, 1849, and 1865. What happened in 1865 that was, in American history, very noteworthy? What happened in 1849 in American history that was very noteworthy? What happened in 1800 that was very noteworthy in American history? About 1620 and 1607. Fortunately, I could have gotten that one correct. But notice that the question number 8 has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 parts. Notice that the question number 7 has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 parts. And many of these have little short treatises that you have to write, little short essays. Uh-oh. Now, here comes this funny word, orthography, time 1 hour. And the guy writes, what is this anyhow? So, Flatwheel, who put out this story, this came from Flatwheel at MadisonCounty.net. This goes back to June 28, 2004, and it's called The Eighth Grade in 1895. Flatwheel put it out, and he asked the question, what is this? I don't know. I haven't got a clue. Never heard of it. But the questions are, listen to this, number one, 10-part test, 1 hour, 10 questions. It says, what is meant by the following? Alphabet, phonetic, orthography, etymology, and syllabication. Well, I think I could probably answer that question, except for orthography. You know, like etymology is the origin of words, and phonetic is the sounding out of the alphabet. Alphabet are the letters. It's the code to language. But how many people know that? And we still haven't found out what an orthography is. Number two, what are elementary sounds and how are they classified? What are elementary sounds like oo, ah, a, a, b, k? Now, number three, what are the following? And give examples of each. Trigraph, subvocals, diphthong, cognate letters, linguals, L-I-N-G-U-A-L-S. I haven't got a clue. A trigraph? Never heard of it. Subvocals? Sounds like to me something to do with your vocabulary, and it's something below, sub, I don't know what it is, diphthong. I've heard the word, but I can't tell you what it is. Cognate letters. I don't know. Linguals. Linguals. I've never heard of a lingual. Now listen, am I the only one out here? I remember the story, you know, of the emperor and his new clothes, where the emperor didn't want to admit to his ignorance, and so he said, "Oh yeah, wow, that's a really beautiful. That's a beautiful suit you got there. That's a beautiful cloth." So remember, yours truly here. I'm 70 years old, and I'm telling you, I don't even know what the hell they're talking about. Do you? Shucks, this is an 8th grade test. I mean, 13 and 14-year-old boys and girls took this test back in 1895 in Salina, Kansas, and passed it and went to high school. Or they passed it and graduated like my grandmother did from 8th grade, and then she never went to high school. Let me tell you, the guy that can pass this test can outperform any high school kid that I've ever heard of here in the United States of America. I don't know of a high school kid. I'll guarantee you that when I was in high school, there wasn't a single 12th grader out of 305 at Eureka High School that could have passed that test. Not a one. I didn't know of one. I couldn't pass it. Hell, I can't pass it today. Which is why I thought I ought to bring up the subject of education here today, because, you know, boys and girls, you and I have been dumbed down. Why is it that my grandmother could pass this test in 1895, but I can't? Is it because my grandmother was more intelligent than I am? Was it because she was just naturally smarter? Were people smarter in the 1890s than they are today? Well, that doesn't say much for evolution then, does it? We're not getting smarter and better. We're getting dumber and poorer, aren't we? Aren't we degenerating? You mean to tell me that in 1895, Americans could pass this test, and today, we don't even know what the hell it is? And you're telling me that we're smarter today than we were in 1895? Look at our progress. Come on here, let's wake up. Number 7. Oh, excuse me. I'm on number 4 here. Give 4 substitutes for caret U. That's spelled C-A-R-E-T. And then it's got a U in parentheses. It says give 4 substitutes for caret U. I don't know what C-A-R-E-T even means. I don't even have a clue. Number 5. Give 2 rules for spelling words with final E. And then name 2 exceptions under each rule. Let me give that to you again. We're talking about orthography, whatever that is. And it's question number 5. And it says give 2 rules for spelling words with final E. I don't know. Then name 2 exceptions under each rule. I don't know. Never heard of it. Number 6. Give 2 uses of silent letters in spelling. And then illustrate each one. So I have to give 2 uses of silent letters in spelling. Okay. So when we are spelling words, there are sometimes words that are silent. They have to be there, but, you know, off the top of my head, I can't think of a one. I guess if I spent a little time at it, maybe I could think of a word that has a silent letter. And then he says, now give me a couple of examples of it and exceptions to the rule. Exceptions. Nobody ever told me about silent letters and exceptions to the rule. Why not? I mean, after all, I went to public school just like my granny did. How come they never taught me that? How come nobody ever said, hey, let's talk about orthography? I never heard the word. Never had a class in it. Nobody ever showed me about these parts of speech. Nobody told me about diphthongs and phonics or phonetic and orthography and etymology? Huh? Did they teach you that? Now, let me add this. If you learned any of this outside of public school, well, isn't that self-education or homeschool? What I want to know is, did you learn this in public school? What public school taught any of this? Next. Number seven. Define the following prefixes and use in connection with the word. Prefixes like B-I, D-I-S, M-I-S, P-R-E, S-I-M-I, P-O-S-T, N-O-N, I-N-T-E-R, M-O-N-O, and S-U-P. Define the following prefixes and then use them in connection with a word. Define. I guess I have to look at the word bi, like bilingual, or dis, like dismiss, or miss, M-I-S, mistake, misrepresent, misnomer, and then pre, P-R-E, preview, premier. Okay, some of these I can do. So I do understand what a DIS is and an MIS and a PRE. That's a PRE. But I don't know what all of them are. There's three or four of them in there I don't know. Why not? Why shouldn't I know? How come I didn't learn that in school? Now, if I put my mind to it, I could pick up a dictionary here and I could start looking up some of these words and some of these questions. But wait a minute, this is a test. I mean, you know, come on. When you go into the test, you don't have your books in front of you, do you? You're supposed to know this. And if you don't know it, how can you pass the test? I mean, you're not going to let me come into the test, are you, with the book so that I can look it up and answer the questions. Hey, boys and girls, I think that you and I got shortchanged here, don't you? Now, if you and I got shortchanged, don't you think your children are being shortchanged today? Which is the point that I'm trying to make. If your children are being shortchanged in public school, don't you think you owe it to your children to remove them from that bad influence or that poor performing educational institution and give them at least a better shot at some kind of education? Public school not only is bad education, it is a non-education. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here before we complete this that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Now, once again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about a test that was given back in 1895 in Salina, Kansas. It was first broadcast or put out for publication that I know of on a website called Flat Wheel. And Flat Wheel here is clb@madisoncounty.net. So if you were to go online and then go to clb@madisoncounty.net, it's called Flat Wheel, FlatWheel. It's dated 6/28/04. That's when we downloaded it. I put it in my education file here. And I was impressed then. I've used this in a number of instances. It's a test given 1895 to 8th graders. I took it, and I flunked miserably. Now, out of this test, let's see, there's a 10, 20, 28, 38, 48 questions. These questions, many of them, are broken up into multiple parts. For instance, question number 7 in this orthography test has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 parts. So in order for you to get number 7 correct, you'd have to answer all 10 of those. Well, unless the teacher was going to give you credit for a part of it. Now, let me tell you a little story here. Back in the old days when they gave the private pilot certificate flight examinations, they gave these multiple part questions. The test itself had 50 questions on it. Let's give you an example of it, and I'll show you what these multiple part questions used to do in the past. They'd start off with question 1, and they would say, can you plot a course from Rohnerville, California to Santa Rosa, California to Sacramento, California to Redding, California and back to Rohnerville, California, giving the miles. So you'd take out your map and you'd plot it out and you'd get to a number and you'd say, well, it's 422 miles. All right. Then they would say, okay, assuming that your airplane cruises at 85 miles an hour with a westerly wind blowing at 15 knots, what would be the elapsed time from Rohnerville to Rohnerville on this course? Okay, so there's question number 2. Then they'd come to question number 3, and they'd say, assuming that your airplane is burning 8.5 gallons per hour, how many gallons of gasoline would you consume on this flight? And so you'd compute the number of gallons and so on. And then they'd ask you the 4th question, you know. What's the elapsed time that it's going to take you to make this flight with these wind conditions and with this average cruising speed? And so you'd say, well, it's going to be 4 hours and 20 minutes or whatever it's going to be. But here's your problem. You see, if you made a mistake on the first answer, when you plotted this out, the next three answers are going to be also in error. They'll be in error simply because the answers in questions 2, 3, and 4 depend upon a correct answer for number one. That's what happened in these multiple part questions. Now, taking a look here at this test called the orthography test, if, for instance, number 7 has 10 parts, and let's suppose you could answer 5, but you couldn't answer the other part, how much credit do you get paid for number 7? It looks like to me you get 0. You either got all 10 of them or you didn't get number 7. That is a god-awful hard standard. You know, today they give you a true and false test. Hell, you got a 50-50 chance of making it when you get a true and false. There isn't a true and false question here, and there isn't a multiple choice answer. Think about it. Today, when I went to school, they gave us true and false and multiple choice. If it's a true and false answer and I answer true, I figured this out as a kid. 70% of the answers on a true and false test are true. Only 30% are false. I've done many of those. So I'd go through and answer every one of them true. Then I'd go through and erase the true if I knew the answer was false. Because they're giving me the answer. Look at multiple choice. They'll ask you a question. It'll be something like, you know, multiple choice. Australia is 3 million square miles, 1 million square miles, 100,000 square miles, or 2.8 million square miles. Now, one of those questions is correct. And so, as I recall from school, Australia was a little less than 3 million. I think it was about 2.8 million. So I can eliminate 100,000 because that's way too low. 3 million, I know that's too high because it wasn't quite 3 million. I can guess based upon the multiple choice because they've given me the answer. Now, it's something different when you say, here are 5 countries, the United States, Canada, China, Australia, and Russia. Now, tell us what the square miles of each one of those countries are. My God, you have to know that America, the United States, has 3,022,000 square miles, or 3,022,000 square miles. You got to know that Australia is 2.8. If you don't know that, then you can't give an answer. And you don't have any answers that you can look at and say, well, that obviously is wrong, so it must be this one. And that's what they're doing here in 1895. They're actually testing, what is it that you know? And boy, you've got to know it. I don't know. As old as I am, I can't pass this test. Number 8, they say, mark diacritically. I'm stuck right now. I haven't got a clue as to what diacritically means. Diacritically. Huh. Okay, well, mark diacritically and divide into syllables the following and then and name the sign that indicates the sound, colon, card, ball, mercy, sir, odd, sell, rise, blood, fair, and last. I don't even know what the hell they're talking about. Do you? Let me read this to you again. Listen to this. It says, mark diacritically and divide into syllables the following and then name the sign that indicates the sound. Card, ball, mercy. Well, mercy is the one word that's got two syllables. Mercy. I can do that diacritically, divide the syllables, and then name the sign. What do they mean, name the sign? What is the sign? What is a sign? I haven't got a clue. Have you? Number 9. Use the following correctly in sentences. Cite, C-I-T-E, cite, S-I-T-E, and cite, S-I-G-H-T. I can do that. Fain, F-A-N-E, F-A-I-N, and F-E-I-G-N. I can't quite do that. Then take Vain, V-A-N-E, V-A-I-N, and V-E-I-N. And then R-A-Z-E, R-A-I-S-E, and then R-A-Y-S. Raise, raise, and raise. It's like two, two, and two. Vain, vain, and vain. Fain, fain, and fain. Sight, sight, and sight. Yeah, some of it I can do, but I can't do all of them. Can't do quite all of them. I looked at it, I analyzed it, I tucked it away in my heart, and I said, I know what that one is, but I don't know what that one is. Such as fain. And I know that F-E-I-G-N is to fake, but F-A-I-N, fain, is that the fain stream media that Bob Chapman talks about? Or was it F-A-N-E? And I can't quite remember. Sight, I can tell you, S-I-G-H-T, that's looking at a site, a building site. S-I-T-E, site. I'm nervous about that one. C-I-T-E, can you cite that in the U.S. code? I got to tell you, in plain language, I don't know all of them. Some of them I do, some of them I don't. Old as I am, couldn't get number 9. Number 10, write 10 words frequently mispronounced and indicate pronunciation by use of diacritical marks and by syllabication. Diacritical marks. Huh. Did I ever learn about diacritical marks? Have you? Do you know what a diacritical mark is? I not only didn't learn it, I don't have a clue as to what it is. It's not to say that none of you out there do. I'm sure that if you take this test, you're going to get some of these questions right. But the bottom line is, can you score 70 on this test? 70. Last one here is geography. Time, 1 hour. Now, you know, most of us today, we know a little bit about geography. I was pretty good in school on geography. I know that, you know, Thailand is in Southeast Asia, and I can find Singapore and Macau and Hong Kong and, you know, East Timor and Indonesia, and, you know, I'm pretty familiar. When I went to school, we did have to learn all of the countries and their capitals on every continent around the world. We had to learn all the countries of Africa and all their capitals. We had to learn all the countries of South America and their capitals. 13 countries, and Central America, there were 7, and North America, there's just 2. Unless you count Mexico, then it'd be 3. We counted Mexico and Central America at that time. The Caribbean islands, we had to learn the Caribbean islands and their capitals. It was quite a little project. So I knew a little something about geography. So I thought, wow, when I take this one, I think I'll be able to pass this in a heartbeat. Now listen to these questions. Here's number 1. The first question in geography is, what is climate, and upon what does climate depend? Oh, wow. This is a geography question. Well, it is true that each one of these countries is going to have a climate, you know, such as Australia. It ranges from tropical rainforest to desert, just like the United States. And then various states in Australia are going to have various climates. So I suppose you should know something about climate. And the question here, well, describe climate then. What is it? And what does climate depend? Well, I've got my ideas, and I don't have the answers to this test, so I'm not sure that I can get that one right or wrong. Number 2, how do you account for the extremes of climate in Kansas? Number 3, of what use are rivers? Of what use is the ocean? Number 4, describe the mountains of North America. Number 5, Name and describe the following: Monrovia, Odessa, Denver, Manitoba, Hesia, that's spelled H-E-C-I-A, Yukon, St. Helena, Juan, Fernandez, Aspinwall, and Orinoco. All right, now watch this. This is question number 5. It's a geography question. Monrovia, is that a country, a city, or a state? Odessa, is that a country, a city, or a state? Denver is a city. Manitoba is a province. Hesia, H-E-C-I-A, never heard of it. Yukon is a territory in Canada. St. Helena is a mountain in the United States. Juan Fernandez, I don't know. Aspinwall, never heard of. And Orinoco is a river in South America. I couldn't get number 5. I couldn't get all 10 of them. And I'm presuming now you've got to be able to identify these 10. Now, it could be that if you got 8 out of the 10, we would give you a percentage. If you could get half, we'd give you 50% of that question, but I'm not sure that that's the standard. Number 6, name and locate the principal trade centers of the United States. I could probably do that. Number 7, name all the republics of Europe and give the capital of each. Uh-oh, this is 1895. Name all of the republics. Well, wait a minute. Think about that one for a minute. Not all of the countries of Europe in 1895 were republics. Notice in 1895, they didn't ask you for the democracies of Europe. They asked you for the republics. At that time, most of them were monarchies. I haven't got a clue as to how many of those countries were republics in 1895. And furthermore, I don't know how many of them are republics today. I could probably identify how many of them are democracies, all of them. Hey, we've eaten up this democracy thing, haven't we? We got democracy everywhere. Our founding fathers loathed democracy. That's why they created the American Republic. And here in 1895, notice that the question in Salina, Kansas was name the republics of Europe. How many are there? Name them. Name all of the republics of Europe and give the capitals of each. Not only do you have to name the countries, you got to know what the capital of the country is. Think of that. Number 8. Why is the Atlantic coast colder than the Pacific in the same latitude? Now, when I saw that question, I said, well, I didn't know that the Atlantic was colder than the Pacific. I'd never thought of it before. I do know that there is a current called the Japanese Current that comes down the Pacific coast, and that's why we have redwood trees on the Pacific coast, because it doesn't freeze there. Listen to this question again. It says, why is the Atlantic coast colder than the Pacific in the same latitude? Not is it, but why? Well, I think the answer is the Japanese current. I probably could get that one right. That's number 8. Number 9. Describe the process by which the water of the ocean returns to the sources of rivers. Describe the process by which the water of the ocean returns to the sources of rivers. Okay, and that's called precipitation. And then number 10, describe the movements of the earth and give the inclination of the earth. Well, the inclination is 23.5 degrees. Describe the movements of the earth. It goes around the sun every 365 days. And it turns on its axis once every 24 hours. Well, whoop-dee-doo. I could answer 2 questions out of 10. Maybe I might have done just a little bit better, but on the geography test, you got 10 questions over here. Some of them are divided up. And I was a total failure, and I thought I was pretty good at geography. But they ask some pretty tough questions, wouldn't you agree? There's the total test, 5 hours, 8th grade. Now, Henry Ford became a very wealthy businessman and industrialist. He had a sixth grade education. My grandfather had a sixth grade education. My grandfather was the mill superintendent at Northern Redwood Lumber Company and the Harold Castile Lumber Company in Willits, California, back in the 1940s, 1935 through 1951 when he died. The last 16 years of his life, he was a mill superintendent. Sixth grade education. Supervised hundreds of workers. Was responsible for the mill production after it left the green chain. Not the mill itself, but the yard production. He was the yard superintendent. Two big lumber companies. Sixth grade education. My granddad was one smart cookie. And looking back at my grandfather, I could tell you that by the time I graduated from high school, I could not hold a candle to him. I mean, by the time I was out of high school, that piece of paper said I was real smart. Same thing with my grandmother. My grandmother was a sharper intellect than my granddad was. My granddad was no dummy. My grandmother was one smart woman. She could work crossword puzzles. I always thought that was quite a talent. That woman had a great vocabulary. She was using words that I could only dream of. I haven't got a clue as to what these words mean. And I think my grandmother probably could have told me what orthography is. I'm going to have to go look that up in the dictionary right after the broadcast and find out what in the heck is that anyway. And that's what this author said. Flatwheel said, what is it? You know, today we don't even know what they were talking about. That's the bottom line. Now, here's a little part to the puzzle over here. Why is it that we're as dumb today as we are, and how did they accomplish that? Well, people are naturally lazy. We really don't want to work. And so they're simply appealing to our laziness. And so they offer us tests like true and false. And multiple choice. And then they've offered us another thing. We don't want our students to feel bad because they were kept back a grade. I told you about a guy that was in school. His name was Henry Moore. At the end, when it's all said and done, out of 305 graduates from Eureka High School in 1957, Henry Moore has got to be the smartest one of all of them there. Because he owns seven houses free and clear, and he's economically or financially better off than any other student there. But he was 2 years behind in school in the ninth grade. 2 years behind. He should have been a junior. He was in the ninth grade. Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. By keeping him back 2 years didn't hurt him at all. At the time, I'm sure he really felt bad being back 2 years in school. But when it's all said and done, that guy financially has done better than the other 304 students in the school, and we weren't kept back. This idea that when you're held back in school, that it's going to scar you for life and spoil your life is baloney. And I just gave you an example. The smartest kid in school was Henry Moore, the guy who was 2 years behind. All right, we're out of time again. I got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.